Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. You know, Mac, I've realized that we've never once said the date of these, you know? Like, do you think that would be helpful to people if they said, oh, this is February, actually it would be March 1st, right?
March 1st, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't know. Should we start
March
now?
March 1st, 2015.
Yes. That's March 1st or thereabouts, this edition of the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
Dear Loomis.
Hello, hello.
Eric Asperslager.
Hello.
And we're here to kill some time and get you prepped for your weekend and enjoying, hopefully going to see what movie is coming out this weekend that everyone's going to go see. It is what? I have no idea. Anyone know? Jack the Giant Slayer, right?
Twilight movie coming out.
No, Jack or The Last Exorcism Part 2.
Oh, God.
So we really mean it this time.
Absolutely pointless sequel I've ever heard of.
So, yeah. I feel like they've run out of ideas for exorcism movies in general. A sequel to a bankrupt idea exorcism movie's got to be really something.
Now, I like The Last Exorcism, but it just doesn't make any sense. Why they would, it's the last, you know, it's like after Nightmare on Elm Street, whatever, Friday the 13th.
Yeah, the final chapter,
and then there's like three more.
The epilogue.
Epilogue 2, or the best is,
the appendix.
When they did Leprechaun 5 in the hood, yeah, and then good. They did Leprechaun it's back sweet, to
right?
the hood.
Oh.
as though Leprechaun 5 in the hood was the original film.
Not our boy Warwick Davis's finest moment, perhaps.
No, but what a costume.
That's true. What a costume. All right, so let's just kind of get right into it. And actually, speaking of Warwick Davis, we are just, maybe 3 weeks removed from Willow on Blu-ray landing.
Yeah, that's right.
Two weeks, right?
It's the 12th, yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so that's happening. It's happening. So,
Do you think they're going to special edition any special effects in there?
Lucas style? That's true. You think he's going to get his fingers in on that? What would they do? Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have anything else to do right now.
That's
so.
True. He's got nothing else to do. Maybe they'll have when Willow zaps that troll and turns him into that ball of meat that turns into the dragon, maybe the troll will yell, no! You know? I'm looking forward to that, obviously. But let's, Mac, start with you. Anything of interest happening?
Let's see. Haven't talked about Castle in a while.
Yeah.
This last week they just wrapped up the season's big two-parter, the big epic that they do every season, and it was really good.
Now are they in a monogamous relationship right now? Monogamous?
Castle and Beckett. Yes, that's the big deal this season. They're a couple.
Has it dipped? You know, has that moonlighting rule come into play?
I don't think so. I think they've been really smart about it, and they've managed to like keep things interesting. Now that they're a couple, earlier this season they did a really great episode where the two of them went to the Hamptons, and it was kind of, you know, breaking away from the show's formula, but in doing so, it got to see them as a couple, and so that was kind of a really smart thing to do. And this two-parter even kind of brought them even closer together.
They investigate a murder in the Poconos?
No, but that's probably next season.
That's okay.
But yeah, this two-parter was really great. They really upped the production value. I won't spoil how, but trust me, they really upped the production value. And lots of crazy twists and turns, lots of big reveals of stuff that they've been sort of hinting at since back when the show started. So it's really exciting, really good stuff.
All right, so... is this your number one your TV show? Is this like your TV show, would you say, the number one? You can't miss, you know, your DVR it if your house is on fire show?
I'd say so, yeah.
All right.
It's definitely, you know, it's the one I probably look forward to the most each week.
Well, I stand by saying that it's just good that Nathan Fillion has got a consistent paycheck coming in. That's all I'm really happy about, so.
Sure thing, yeah, and he's great on the show.
Very good. Anything else?
Let's see. Oh, I finally got around to seeing Drive for the first time.
Oh, what'd you think?
It's a really good movie. It really blew me away.
Really good movie. I was really skeptical of it. I'd heard lots and lots of good things about it, but was really skeptical about it. until I finally saw it, which was probably in like this past June or something like that. And now I've seen it like 7 times, and it consistently gives me new things to love about it.
I'll bet.
It's a brilliant, beautiful movie.
Nice. All right. Well, with that, Daryl, why don't you take up the baton? What have you been up to?
Not a ton. I did finally get a chance to see the first part of the 7th season of Doctor Who that hasn't shown up on Netflix yet, but did get to see it, which is the end of the last companion and the beginning of the new companion, which was interesting and a needed change, I think, in the end. Even though Karen Gillian was a very fine companion, I think her time had run its course. And they had done so many false finishes in getting rid of that relationship that it, when they finally did it, I think they sort of killed any emotional content they could have drilled out of that. It's the second half of the 7th season is coming up in about a month, so it'll be interesting to see how that all comes out.
All right.
But not a lot else beyond that.
Okay. Eric?
I've been checking out the second season of Burning Love, the web series.
Yes, haven't fired that one up yet. How does it measure up to the first one?
It's good. I think that, you know, the novelty and the freshness of the first one isn't there because they're doing it again, but it's still very funny. This is the flipping it last time. The first time it was Ken Marino was essentially the bachelor, and then all the women. And this time it's June Diane Raphael, who was one of the female contestants from the first season, plays back as Julie for the second season. She's the main bachelorette, if you will. And then there's a whole host of guys.
Joel Attruglio is in that, right?
Joel Attruglio, Nick Kroll, Adam Scott, Paul Scheer, Martin Starr, wow. Ryan Hansen, Colin Hanks, Michael Cera.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of everyone. It's great. I mean, they do a really good job of bringing people on and just, and Michael Ian Black is sort of like the host. Yeah, he's still the host. So it's essentially the same, you know, structure as the first one. They're pumping them out. There's like 2 episodes every week. I think yesterday when you're listening to this, will be episode 6 already. Okay. So, each one's like between 11 and 13 minutes long. So they're pretty substantial. I know they just recently, started airing the first season on E, and I'm not sure how that works. I don't know if they're like stringing them together to make half hour episodes. I guess they could probably do 2 at a time, but, it's good. I mean, I'm glad the show is getting some recognition. I think it's encouraging to see a quality, web-only series out there. Certainly House of Cards, a very, very different kind of quality web series, and then hopefully Arrested Development. I mean, this is at least part of the future, so I'm glad that we can get good stuff for now. But that's been a lot of fun. I definitely recommend that.
Yes. You got to think there's got to be a DVD release coming of that stuff at some point, right?
I'd hope so. I mean, they did that for Wayne Days.
That's true.
Which was, I mean, a different kind of thing. But that was still web-only. Yeah. Yep. So I hope so. I think now especially that you know, a major cable network has got involved. I hope they do that. You know, maybe with some bonus features, because all of those people could get together and have some fun in a audio commentary setting.
Yeah, I need to set up.
Sure. Yeah. And the other thing I rewatched for the first time since the theater, War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. And that's a movie that I saw in the theater and really, really liked. And I left, and I was just, you know, really high on it. And then every time I heard anyone talk about it after that, it was in a negative way. It was one of those situations where I kind of doubted my own experience, sort of like the Broken Arrow effect, if you will, if we're talking about left.
Yeah.
I thought maybe, you know, I'd seen it, but it was just in the right mood. But I watched it again, and I think it's a great movie. I think that there are some pacing problems, but what he does, especially that first hour, is just spectacular. Yeah. I mean, as far as like a disaster, attack kind of end of the world type scenario, the effects still hold up. It's great.
I think it's pretty scary too.
Totally.
My only issue is kind of like issue I tend to have with like all Spielberg movies. It kind of, not all of them, but if there's one kind of issue I take is they seem to peter out a little bit towards the end. I feel like he peaks. At some point, it'll peak, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's an action sequence or a particularly suspenseful part. and then it just kind of loses steam. You know, like Minority Report was like that for me. It's kind of like peaked in the middle with some really great stuff, and it just kind of really wilted at the end. And I thought I kind of thought War of the Worlds was that a little bit. Even but the nature of the story obviously is like the aliens themselves wilt. So
yeah, it's hard because you know the first hour is so nonstop. That to kind of maintain that fever pitch for the whole movie would have been tough. At the same time that you feel like it got front loaded with all this great stuff. By the time it gets to the back half, it both slows down for a period and then it feels like you like jump forward without seeing what happens in between these the sort of the middle section and then the end. It feels kind of abrupt and slow at the same time. So I think pacing not great, but what he's able to do, I think, with the alien invasion and making it scary, still holds up very well. So that was fun to watch.
Very good. Let's see. On my end, sorry, not much happening here. I will say that I was pleased to find out that the coach from the documentary Undefeated, which I raved about, tweeted back to DVD Verdict saying, "Thanks for watching the movie," and like, all right, well, that's like 6 degrees of separation from someone sort of famous. That's my account. So I guess I'll take that. So, but beyond that, nothing else, man. So
yeah, when I get notices from people who were in or made a movie, it's mostly hating me.
Ah, nice. All right.
So I think that's a good thing.
Okay, good. Well, the hate mail can be fun too. I was accused recently of not being able to speak, to speak genuinely about doing coke. So,
poor you.
Yeah, poor me.
I mean, proves they don't know you.
They
at
don't
all.
Know me well. At
I
all.
Mean,
they have no idea what goes down.
Anyone?
I did have something fleeting that. Oh yeah, I will. So I don't know. Parks and Rec had a two-part episode, big one with Leslie getting married, and I am back on like. This show has just really lost so much for me.
The second half of that two-parter just.
I can't remember it. I mean, I can't remember that. What was it? Was it the hacked email? Is that the second one?
Yeah, the hacked email and Ron punching the guy and going to jail.
Yeah,
stink bombs. It just wasn't very interesting. And you know what I hope. Is that now that Leslie and Ben are married, they'll kill it, and they won't force us to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they just talk about being a boring couple. You know, I mean,
that's a picture of a boring couple.
It was just boring. I mean, I think it's just the whole. I don't know. I mean, now what do they do with Anne too? I mean, Anne's become kind of like I feel like this ridiculous plot line of her getting Chris's sperm in her, right? Like looking for the. I mean, they're dancing around that obvious relationship which they've been doing for so long, and that doesn't make sense, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, Chris, you know, well, for as good as he was in his first couple of seasons, they just don't seem to be writing for him anymore.
They don't. I mean, when Ben and Chris together were great as like a little tandem, you know, and because Ben was kind of that. You know, kind of that hardcore guy who was offsetting Chris's bubbly, ridiculous persona. Then, yeah, they don't write for him. They don't do a lot of, I think overall, glimpses of brilliance from Andy and Ron and, even Tom doesn't really bring it much.
He's not bringing it. I still like April.
That's right.
I've always found her, like, sardonic garbage really pretty funny.
And that's a marriage that actually. Gives me, you know, gives some laughs once in a while too.
Yeah, and I mean, they even delivered some sweetness at a few times, like when they went out to the Grand Canyon and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, but they don't. Again, they don't write for that as much as they've just been writing strictly for the Leslie Knope character.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big mistake because ultimately it's all these people that and Retta Donna doesn't get written for ever.
Jerry either. Gets very few. I mean. I think it's really sourced in this. All the problems kind of come from Leslie's storyline. Like they just really kind of ruined her with all this stuff. And I mean, they all play out the same way. Like there's something she's trying to do, and there's some ridiculous caricature of a cartoonish villain standing in her way, right?
And that guy sucks.
Yeah, so but it's so
he's like one of the new guys on The Office. He's like this characterless villain.
But I still don't. The guy still don't know whose name is. But yeah, so
yeah.
So they just kind of set up that dynamic. Oh, she needs to accomplish this thing, but this guy is this cartoon character. But they will overcome it, and I don't know. It's just kind of boring and.
Well, and there's no story suspense in there either because, of course, they'll figure out a way to get the park built as opposed to putting another paunch burger in.
Yeah, right, right. That's right.
Of course.
That's true. It's set up to be so ridiculous.
I mean, you know, the first two seasons, that place was a hole. I mean, a literal hole in the ground.
Right.
And they were, you know, the comedy was for that was driven out of how are they going to fill the hole, which is so absurd. But actually works, and now that it's a flat piece of land, it's a flat piece of comedy.
Yeah, I know. It's just juxtaposing. I was just thinking of some of the awesome stuff from earlier episodes, like when Andy Samberg was the very loud park ranger. You know, I laughed so hard at that stuff, so consistently, and I felt that was like perfect, like Leslie Knope at her best, and that was like Amy Poehler just really working that character perfectly, just putting in these situations, you know, she's in these kind of crazy situations, but it all changed, so I don't know. Yeah.
So Dave,
and we're spared an episode of The Office, too. I didn't even watch Community, so I'd have to rely on what you guys say about Community, so.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Okay.
It wasn't great. No. Dave, at this point, would you, instead of Parks and Rec, would you just like a Ron and Andy meme generator?
I don't even think I would. I wouldn't. Because I don't. Like, I don't.
I mean, because that's essentially what those characters are now, even on the show. Is just right. Like it's they're doing their thing, and that's what's funny because everything else isn't.
Yeah.
But other than that, they're not like pushing those characters forward.
You're exactly
really.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. And I mean, again, Parks and Rec to me has always been an ensemble comedy. When it's at its best, it's an ensemble, right? And I think a lot of the focus is just kind of shifted around. So you're right on the money when you say like, yeah, they'll just have these one-liners like. And Daryl, was it you, or maybe it was Dan Mancini who mentioned this? That it was like Ron kind of is not. I mean, he's just kind of he'll say these one-liners and he'll do these, but he doesn't have any kind of consistent like ideology or method to his madness. You know, I mean, that's what kind of made that fun, that relationship with Leslie fun, was they like butted heads on everything. But they still.
Yeah, she's super government. He's super anti-government.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet they find a common ground to be friends, and that's a good relationship.
Right. And humor came out of that.
Right.
Now it's just like, I mean, I don't know. It's just like everyone kind of gets sucked into this vortex of where they're trying to go with the plot.
Well, it's like they're not. It's like the only person in the show who's actually part of the Parks Department is Leslie. You know, Ron doesn't talk about what goes on with the Parks Department anymore. Yeah. He just spews his one-liners. And granted, Nick Offerman's a funny man. And the stuff that, you know, the stuff from not this past week, but the previous one, where he's hosting where he's de facto hosting the morning show, was hilarious.
Yes, that was funny. There was funny stuff.
There was some of the funniest stuff that's been on the show in a year. But they can't sustain that because they don't have the storylines to actually sustain these.
And I wouldn't even want to watch like an entire entire series built around, you know, Ron Swanson. You know, I mean, I don't think
answering questions of idiots.
I mean, that
you
wouldn't
know?
Work. Yeah, I mean, it's like that show worked because of his ensemble, and I don't know. That's just.
I mean, I think that's where we are with Community too. If we want to go back to that, is that in the past few episodes. The problem with the show is that you basically have like three plot lines in an episode, and everyone's been paired off and divided up into you know different subplots, and then they start out together and they end up together, but other than that, it's just kind of bouncing between these things, so they don't really interact the way they used to.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if I'll ever. I'm not sure if I can ever watch. I don't think I'll ever watch another episode of Community. You know,
I'm going to see
the ones I have on DVD.
Yeah. I'm going to see it through because I've spent, you know, I spent this much time watching it. You know, it's so. I mean, I'm gonna power through, but
yeah,
it's mostly just
watching out of curiosity.
Yeah, it's a sad state. I like the characters. I like the actors. So there are things there that I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah.
But in that, they're kind of especially in this past episode with the Annie character. They basically regressed her to the first episode of season two, forgetting that she had actually grown up.
Yeah,
that's true.
And so it's all like, you know, she's back to being the teeny bopper with her eyes fluttering in love with Jeff Winger. And, you know, there may have been some chemistry there and some, like, will they, won't they garbage, you know, throughout. But now, in this last episode, I mean, Dave, you haven't seen it, but spoiler alert.
Go for it.
She's sitting around pretending, like, you know, having this this teenage fantasy that she and Jeff are married. And it's juvenile and has nothing to do with what that character did in the full third season of the show. And it's like, I think, Eric, you said it when the first episode aired, that it's like the writers watched, you know, a few episodes of the show and then stopped watching.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And started writing anew from there.
Or maybe wrote from having talked to people who liked the show. You know? Why'd you like the community? What was awesome about it? Okay, I'm going to write a script about what you're telling me, what you liked about it.
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing is that it's like, it's only truly terrible compared to what the show used to be. It's a perfectly serviceable sitcom. I'm not laughing that much, but then again, most sitcoms aren't terribly funny either.
And that's a good caveat. Like, we're dumping on this because we know what these shows were once. I mean,
right.
It's not like this is Two Broke Girls.
And Community.
No, this isn't Two Broke Girls.
Yeah, this is Two Broke Girls.
Yeah.
Even Parks and Rec is still like, I still enjoy generally watching it on like compared to almost everything else, compared to like Big Bang Theory or whatever. It's still a good show.
Yes, so, you're right.
It's just not great.
Yeah, as far as that perspective, it's true.
But again, it's different, but it's The Office is just plainly terrible.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
These shows aren't plainly terrible. They're just not what we expect them to be and what they should be.
And you know what? Sometimes that hurts the most.
It does. It does. It makes me reticent about the coming Arrested Development.
It's like the Knicks. They start out 18-5, top of the Eastern Conference, and they've been 500 balls since then. And you know, it's like I know what they're capable of, so I'm disappointed. You know, they're not the Charlotte Bobcats, but I know what they're capable of.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, speaking of disappointment, maybe we shouldn't start every episode of the podcast with 15 minutes ragging on NBC's Thursday Night Lineup.
Yeah, that's true.
we might want to take a break for a few weeks just to get people.
Yeah. I felt like I haven't talked about it in 2 weeks, so maybe we'll take a longer break then.
Maybe
take a longer break. Okay, well, let's move on anyway. Stuff we got coming up for the site. Maybe we got some more cheerful stuff. Mac, you got anything cheerful coming up?
Kind of.
Good.
I'm burning my way through the complete series of The Drac Pack.
Oh, yeah.
This is a cartoon that ran on Saturday mornings back in 1980. It's from Hanna-Barbera, and man, something was in the water in Hanna-Barbera back in the day, because I don't know how they come up with this stuff. How do I describe this? So you've got our three heroes are Drac, Frankie, and Howler. We're ordinary teenagers, but...
Wait a minute, okay. Okay, so, Eric, Drac, Frankie, and Howler, what monsters do you think they are?
The Drac,
yes.
Frankie, and Howler?
Yeah, Drac, right, Frankie, and Howler. Okay. What monsters do you think they might be?
Drac, that sounds Russian, so I'm going to guess evil communist.
Okay.
Frankie, the 50s kind of a thing,
that's
so
right.
I'm saying undead greaser, maybe like an undead greaser.
Okay.
And what was that one, Howley?
Howler.
Howler. Oh, Howler. Okay, it's a monkey, so maybe Bigfoot.
All right. How close, Mac?
Sort of close.
Yeah.
No, these are the descendants, we're told, of Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman.
Okay.
And they're out to prove.
Who did they mate with?
I don't know.
Mrs. Dracula, yeah, Mrs. Frankenstein.
Just plainly, Frankenstein's monster just plainly be infertile.
I couldn't think of anything more, like, creative to name their offspring, you know?
I don't know.
Frankie?
Frankie.
Like, Howler is okay, I guess, but I don't know.
Seems like a lot of detail to give Frankenstein's monster a working reproductive system.
I mean, at least, I guess, I mean, okay, I can buy that Frankenstein's monster and the Wolfman, you know, maybe they're a little bit more animalistic, maybe they don't have the greatest imagination, but Dracula's like an aristocrat. He's gotta have, maybe that's it, maybe it's a family name, and they just kind of, you know, it's Drac the Seventh or something, so.
Could be.
It makes sense. That washes. We'll go.
I like that. Now, is Howler, does he have a human form, or is he constantly in werewolf form?
Well, no, that's the thing. That all three of them, they just look like ordinary teenagers. But when they do a high five and they say the magic word wacko, that's when the...
Wow, really?
Oh, you're making this up.
Wow. That's some of the worst Hanna-Barbera that I've heard of. And I reviewed the Dukes of Hazzard Hanna-Barbera.
Mac, I don't want to alarm you, but I think you might be getting catfished here. This is a fan-made DVD set that Michael sent to you. It's part of an elaborate scheme.
something does. This doesn't sound.
Does not sound right.
That's wacko.
It's
wacko.
To go rescue some Iranian hostages. They say the magic word wacko, and then they transform into their monstrous forms where they have powers, and they battle the evil Dr. Dredd. Because Dr. Dredd and his sidekicks are out to prove that Dr. Dredd is the world's greatest criminal, but he's always defeated by these three teenagers. And it's just insane. It's completely just off the wall insane. Like in one episode.
Plainly sounds like it.
Yeah. I can imagine if there's like a werewolf hunter in town. It's like, I know there's a werewolf in this town somewhere, but they're all in human form. How will I identify him? Now he looks at all the kids. Ah, there's Billy, Tom, Jack, and Howler. I must be him, Detective Reasoning. And then honestly, they name him to like fly under the radar, didn't they?
You know, I'm okay with all. It's wacko is what I'm getting hung up on. I'm getting hung up on the word wacko. It's the only part that doesn't work for me, and I don't know why.
Wacko.
The rest of it's fine, but why wacko?
Yeah, go ahead, Mac. You were just
sorry. Mac.
Yeah. So in one episode, Dr. Dredd strands Drac on a deserted island, right? Your typical cartoon island that's the lump of sand with a palm tree on it.
Of course.
And so he's like, oh no, I'm trapped on this island. How am I going to get out? So he walks over to the palm tree. There's a little door on it. He opens the door. There's a button. He pushes the button, and the entire island transforms into a giant helicopter. Excellent. That he uses to fly to safety.
All right.
That's the type of logic we're dealing with on this show.
Okay. All right.
All right. Then wacko works.
Yeah, wacko.
Wow.
That's wow, so man. Awful.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Thanks for sharing. That did cheer me up.
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera's world was a bizarre one.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of like walking through the sky in old Looney Tunes, Warner Brothers cartoons.
Oh yeah.
But nothing really tops the senseless wackiness of Hanna-Barbera. They just really take the cake. And I mean, this. You know, did you guys ever watch Laugh Olympics?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
You know, where they basically just made a reality TV show out of all of their stupid cartoon characters.
Yes, I do remember that.
You know, it's like, okay. So, you know, it's fine. It's just incredibly stupid and wacky.
It is. I mean, I haven't reviewed as much as Mac you have, but I will say that my time spent with Jabberjaw was certainly out.
The hell, they made a Laverne and Shirley cartoon.
What 5-year-old wants to watch Laverne and Shirley cartoon?
You know, and I don't know if they wrote in space or what, but you know,
yeah, it would have to have some kind of gimmick, some kind of
based on the ghosts. Dukes cartoon, and the Dukes of Hazzard cartoon was using the second group of the Dukes boys, you know, Chaz and Jimmy or whatever.
Ooh,
they
were. Oh,
really?
You know, and a monkey. And so it's just the most genuinely stupid ideas. I think they basically hired people for, you know, the number of stupid ideas they could come up with in 10 minutes.
All right, okay, I'm going to read you a paragraph from the Wikipedia entry of Laverne and Shirley, because I had to do some research.
Okay.
During the run of the main show, an animated spinoff called Laverne and Shirley in the Army began airing on Saturday morning. The first program was aired on October 10th, 1981. The show featured the voices of Marshall and Williams playing Laverne and Shirley in the Army, much like they had been during the 79-80 season, with a talking piglet drill sergeant named Squealy. Named Squealy. Voiced by Welcome Back Cotter alum Ron Palillo.
Okay. Nice.
Okay, now how about this? The show was renamed Laverne and Shirley with the Fonz. When the Fonz began working in the motor pool as a chief mechanic.
That's so good.
And that show ran for 2 years. So an animated show where Laverne and Shirley take orders from a pig, talking drill sergeant pig, and with and the Fonz is the chief mechanic, ran for 2 years.
Yeah, that's Hanna-Barbera.
And Firefly gets
right
canceled
there.
After 9 hours. Oh, boy. It's good stuff. Daryl, why don't you bring us what you got?
All right, I got a couple of sequels. This week I've got Halloween 2, which turns out I hate a lot less than I hated when I first saw it, or when I last saw it, I guess, which has been a few years. But it actually works pretty well as a sequel.
Really?
Not great, but decent. Decent. Better than Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, for sure. For whatever that's worth.
Oh, you said Halloween.
Halloween 2.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said The Howling.
Oh, The Howling.
Oh, no. I would love to go back and see The Howling 2. I don't even know if I ever saw that. I saw Howling 3, The Marsupials, because it takes place in the in Australia. Halloween 2 is a decent movie. And then I've got In Like Flint, the sequel to Our Man Flint, which I reviewed a few weeks ago, and is one of my favorite pair of spy spoofs that I've ever seen. And haven't watched that yet, but I already know how I feel about that movie. It's rad. Last week I did do, which basically took up all of my time, over the last week, I reviewed a 20-episode collection of Naked City, late 50s, early 60s cop programming, which I used to watch when I was a kid, and really, really liked, but hadn't watched in 20 years or something, and was pleasantly surprised. This set was 20 star-filled episodes, so you had a bunch of early performances from Robert Redford and Robert Duvall, and it was funny. There was one with Christopher Walken, where he's like 16 or 17, and he looks very different, he sounds very different, but he acts exactly the same. Nothing has changed in the way that he acts. It's exactly the same stilted performance as a 17-year-old farmhand as it is him playing a senator in The Wedding Crashers or whatever, which was really funny to watch, even though I don't think he found it funny at the time.
All right. So, yeah. All right. So your full dance card.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Eric.
I'm reviewing the Veep or Veep. Is it the Veep or Veep? I forget. Veep, I should know this. Veep. Veep season one.
Yeah.
I should know that because I'm reviewing it and I just watched it. But yeah, Veep season one, HBO series with Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the vice president who apparently took the job after her own presidential campaign went down in flames. Right. So she is kind of starting from behind. I liked it a lot. It's 8 episodes in the first season. It's funny. There's some... she's in it. Tony Hale from Arrested Development is in it. Some other people I should probably recognize but don't. But it's a good ensemble show. It's sort of there's a bit of it that's kind of like a more cynical, snarky version of like Parks and Recreation, but it's a different kind of political setting. It's actually not like that at all, but you know, it's...
Yeah, we
politics,
watched that
so.
Too. It was running in conjunction with Game of Thrones, so we watched it on the HBO window. We liked it. I thought that kind of ran out of gas towards the end. I think it had a weird tonal shift, if I remember right. It seemed to kind of have this weird tonal thing. And I mean, we did find it funny. I don't think I really like gut laughed or anything, but I thought it was a funny show. And there was there were definitely some moments for sure, and it was fast paced and and well written stuff and well acted. And what's her face from My Girl? Was it Anna Chomsky? Remember her? She's
that's right.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's who that is. Okay. yeah. It's not. I can't give it kind of the unconditional recommendation I would something like Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's a little bit more of a, like I said, not a slow burn, but the laughs don't always come fast and furious. But it is funny, and the way the characters interact with each other is where a lot of the jokes really land. So I think watching it all kind of just kind of a marathon couple sessions helped. I didn't really feel that tonal shift, but maybe that's because I was just burning through the episodes. So yeah, it's pretty solid.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah, and then I'm reviewing another of the Scream Factory releases. Go along with Daryl's. I'm reviewing a movie called Death Valley from 1982, which is a little bit more of a thriller than a horror movie. But it stars, it's the feature film debut of one Peter Billingsley, who would go on 1 year later to play Ralphie in A Christmas Story. But, before that, he was a boy named Billy who was on vacation out west with his, divorced mother and her boyfriend. And, while he's out there, he stumbles upon a serial killer's crime scene, and the killer identifies him and tracks him. And it's actually pretty solid. I think the ending, they fumbled the ending pretty badly, unfortunately, with some just weird, with a twist that's not even really a twist, because I sort of assumed that was, you know, the thing that they revealed was the case, I assumed from early on. And just a baffling, ending that's supposed to be, kind of nerve-wracking, but if they had done one thing differently, that would actually make sense. It would have played differently. But kind of up to that point, it's well done. Wilford Brimley, did I say Wilford Brimley was in it? He's in it as a cop. He's good. And the movie actually has some interesting things, to say about a divorced family. A lot of movies will treat, children of divorce and divorce, where the kids are kind of like just angry and rebellious, and it's kind of brushed off. But they take a few scenes to really kind of deal with the emotions of it, and there's some moving stuff in and among the kills. So it's kind of a mixed bag. But I'm glad that Shout Factory is giving some of these movies that maybe don't deserve the royal treatment for fans. You know, who like those kinds of movies, because their horror has passionate fans. So
they do, and they do. Shout Factory does a pretty consistently good job.
They're
the ones that did Halloween 2 as well.
Yeah, I reviewed the DVD version of the Blu-ray that you have a while back. So yeah, they did a great job with that. You know, they put a lot of effort in the movie that maybe didn't deserve that much effort, but hey, it's great.
Nice. See, for me, it's another horror movie. I'm not sure, Daryl, I don't know if you've watched this one, or maybe Mac, or even Eric. I'm not sure if you, this eluded me, but The Nest. Anyone watch The Nest? Roaches have never tasted meat until now. Huh? Yes? No? It's a killer roach movie. Killer roach movie. Surprisingly entertaining. So, this is mid-80s, pretty gory, and it's all practically done, you know, so like these really stiff moving models and such, and like pretty fake heads getting chopped off, but it's pretty entertaining and they play it straight, so it's, even though it's, the idea is ridiculous, basically the plot is a scientist has genetically developed roaches that will eat other roaches to finally end the roach plague. And of course, they all attack us, and we get
that
a lot of
barely works.
We get a lot of roach POV shots, you know.
Oh, nice.
And they're definitely not. I mean, they're way too high off the ground to be a roach POV shot. But then again, I guess you can't just have your screen filled with grass and topsoil.
So. I've never heard of that, but I will say that the director, his name is Terrence Winkless.
That's pretty good.
Sounds like a fake name,
Terrence Winkless.
The movie he made after The Nest, which was his first movie, was The Great Blood Fist with Don the Dragon Wilson.
Oh, nice. I thought the name of the movie was The Great Blood Fist, and that was... But yeah, I know Blood Fist for sure. But I would actually recommend this. If you want old-school 80s horror, blood, guts, but all practically done with puppets and, you know, food coloring and whatnot, this isn't a terrible option. So
it is better that way.
Yes. So
even if it looks cruddy,
it absolutely is. Here's a spoiler alert: the evil mad scientist, actually who's female, which is pretty cool because you don't get a lot of female mad scientists. I don't think it's the great glass ceiling, I suppose.
It's a total glass ceiling.
Yes, but she's a pretty good villain. She gets grabbed by this crazy roach mutant thing, and she gets her arm torn off and, like, the top of her head bitten off with this pincer. And it's all super fake looking, but there is charm in that, and I will take that over at CGI Bloodshed any day. So
yeah,
definitely old school throwback creature feature. And look, when after watching an interminable amount of sci-fi, you know, boa versus python horror, that's welcome. So, yeah, with that, Mac, why don't we move on?
Sure, we're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the DVD releases tab, and from there, scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for March 5th. And just talk about what we see on the list here.
All right.
Probably big Hollywood releases of the week. We've got Wreck-It Ralph from Disney, a video game comedy. And a remake of... I never saw that. I heard a lot of good things about it, though.
Yeah, but it was pretty good.
Oh, you saw that? You did see that, Eric?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
I saw
you did.
It.
I did, yeah.
It was good. I mean, I think if you like video games,
They
treat all of those characters with... respect in the sense that they do right by the licenses that they got. So yeah, it's pretty clever. I recommend it.
Well, let's see, we got the totally unnecessary and thoroughly delayed Red Dawn.
Oh, that's right.
The remake.
Hey, this guy's famous now. Let's get this movie out.
Let's finally do this movie. We recorded this movie. We refilmed this movie in 2008. But now that Chris Hemsworth has been in like four movies, it's somehow worth it.
That's right. I shudder to think, you know, what Channing Tatum movies that are on the shelf are coming our way. You know?
That's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4, or called
yes.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger became famous at the same time. And so they decided, oh, now it's time. Now we need to release this to make as much money as we can out of it. And that amount of money is basically zero.
See, we need either Craig Sheffer or Pia Zadora to really catch fire.
Oh,
so we
man.
Can get it. We can get Void the Rock Alien.
Oh,
yeah, if only Pia Zadora could have caught fire.
That's what's got to happen.
If there were a few more bloody kills in that movie, maybe Shot Factory would pick it up.
That's right.
We'd get it.
So here's the Marine 3. They keep cranking these Marine movies out. I don't know.
Yeah, what happened to John
Cena?
Who
is this guy?
Well, John Cena was the first one. Oh, this is The Miz, the Dingleberry from the real world.
Oh, this is The Miz?
Yeah, who became an actual wrestler, and I guess a pretty popular one.
Yeah. No, but his hair's down, I guess.
And the lighting is the lighting. He does not look like him. He does not look
like him. Oh, yeah, Mike The Miz Mizani.
Yeah, he does not look like him. And Neil McDonough is in this, of course.
Of course.
Everybody's. And then you've got the strange double feature of Hondo, the old John Wayne movie, and the new True Grit.
Okay.
Which I have a hard time understanding why they wouldn't just do the old True Grit with the other John Wayne movie. But no, they decide to cash in, I guess.
An actual, actually good release. Schindler's List is finally out on Blu-ray. This is kind of a long-awaited disc. This is when I reviewed that 100th anniversary set end of last year from Universal that had like whatever 30 some odd movies in it. The DVD version of that set came with a DVD for Schindler's List because the Blu-ray wasn't out yet and the Blu-ray didn't come on the. So if this had been out, then I imagine it would have been included. So I hear good things about it.
Also, we've got
maybe
Westworld on coming out on Blu-ray. Definitely cult classic. Hasn't aged too well. But
this is the new Westworld, though, I believe.
The new one? That's Yul Brynner on the cover, right?
No, it is Yul Brynner. Now that I'm looking at it closely, it
says
written and
directed by Michael Crichton, so it can't be.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah,
The release says 2013.
Oh, that's strange.
So it's just a bad listing from Amazon. But yes, that is the old Westworld. So
yes.
A movie that it's been on our request list, and I might request it now, Ultramarines. I don't know much about the Warhammer 40K stuff. I played the game Warhammer Space Marine, which I liked a great deal.
Really?
But I know it's super, I mean, everything, it's so drenched in mythology that I wouldn't even know where to start, but I don't know, maybe I'll request this, just because I got a kick out of what I played and what I, you know, a glimpse of the world, so it seemed kind of cool.
I think you start by making your own lead molds and
yes,
getting the paints
right.
out.
Yes.
You paint all the little guys and you put them on your... That's where you start.
All right, anything else?
That's looking like about it.
All right, so let's
go. You start talking about Buster Keaton movies.
No, okay. Let's go on to an apparently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. So, Mac, why don't you go first?
Let's see, how about Lay the Favorite?
That's good.
That's a good one.
Okay. All right. Let's go, Eric. What do you got?
I'll go with Intouchables.
Which is actually a movie I have to review.
Oh, okay.
It looks like a pretty moving movie about a paraplegic, guys. Wow. So that is, I think you win the gold for like inadvertently sound.
It wasn't a kids movie. It was a kids movie. Then I, you know,
that's
next level.
Daryl,
Let me make a decision here real fast.
And while you're thinking, can I just say? The Easter Bunny puppy looks. I hope it's eaten by that eaters thing. All right, go ahead. What do you got, Daryl?
I guess I'm going to go ahead and go with One Night with the King.
All right. Well, we have a special guest, sleazy sounding DVD release from Chief Justice Mike Staley, and it's Play with Barney. That's his. He gave me a link. And for mine, I will say Wagon Train. So that is mine. All right.
Yeah, Wagon Train was one of mine. The other one that I was thinking about was California Solo.
And Beijing Bicycle sounds like a euphemism.
I mean, Ocean Giants, that kind of.
Ocean Giants was another good one. This was a good week for.
Yeah, did you hear about that senator and the photos of him doing the Beijing Bicycle with his.
With the Ocean Giants?
The Ocean Giants. Okay, moving along before this totally gets into subpar territory, which I guess we've already been in that for about 5 years now anyway. So, ambush topics, you know how this works. Daryl, why don't you kick us off this time?
I'm going to go with laundromats. Laundromats.
Okay, I'll just go... I'll go with... Job's utter dismay when he pulled Franklin out of the.
Oh yeah. Job, you've ruined the bit.
And he saw his whole career just.
And he suddenly talks like a white guy.
That's right. He's
like an awful caricature of a white guy.
Can I just say, again, last time I'll dump on the third. Just George Bush hates, you know, George Bush hates black puppets. Just that sticker alone. That's the thing I've seen, like, all year so far. It's George Bush hates black puppets. It's just the, okay, I'm sorry.
Yes. Job, you've ruined the bit.
That's right.
Alright, well, I'm not gonna get
okay, go ahead. Someone jump in.
Alright, I'm not gonna get spoilery on this. I will say that there is parts of Breaking Bad that take place in a laundromat.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Oof. Sorry, is that gonna set your mind racing with the possibilities of what could possibly be watched or whatever.
You mentioned Dr. Horrible earlier.
Yeah, true.
A lot of key scenes in that take place in the laundromat. That's kind of the only place where Dr. Horrible can sort of be himself and make contacts with others.
Sing a song to, what's her name?
Yes, to Penny.
Penny, yes. Yeah, that was one of my two.
All right, so what's yours?
My other one is the scene in the original Toxic Avenger where the newly formed Toxie forces a complaining old lady into a dryer and kills her dryer style.
All right. Very good. Mac, what do you have?
Okay. Let's go with villains – who have really cool voices.
I mean, I'm going to guess Darth Vader's excluded from this because he would be the de facto choice. So.
All right, well, I am going to go with the original animated Transformers the movie, where the planet-eating...
Don't say Starscream, because he's got the worst.
No, it's the worst.
Okay.
No, the planet-eating planet, yes. Unicron, voiced by Orson Welles.
Not bad.
In it, I believe his final film role, which is a, you know... not exactly a pretty place to leave your career.
Yeah.
But Orson Welles had left the realm of pretty places. but yes, Unicron, and that voice was very fine.
Well, I mean, combination voice and delivery, but I mean, it doesn't get much better than Hans Gruber.
No, not at all.
Just, I mean, as far as just the suave douchebag, you know, Euro terrorist after gold bullion and non-negotiable bearer bonds, it is him. It is Alan Rickman. And, I mean, like, even Jeremy Irons essentially playing his brother in the third movie, you know, mm-hmm. fell short. And he was given lots of senior to chew, but nothing like, I give you the FBI.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm an exceptional thief. Excellent, Hans Gruber. With a shout-out, honorary mention to someone who really tried to best them but totally became a caricature of a villain, John Lithgow in Cliffhanger.
Oh, God, yeah.
he really went too much.
All right, this one might seem a little obvious, but I'll go with Heath Ledger's Joker in Dark Knight.
Ah, good. Good, good. That is correct.
That's a good, cool voice.
Very unlike Heath Ledger, didn't I mean, really? Just
yeah.
All right, Mac?
Well, for me, I went back to the 1970s to the original Battlestar Galactica and the original Cylons.
Well,
if you think about it, the old-school Cylons weren't that intimidating. The armor was really clunky, and they moved really slowly, and they had just the one eyeball that was constantly going back and forth in front of their face. It's like, I was, you know, how did they see with their eyeball constantly pinging back and forth, but despite all that, though, they were intimidating.
Because they just aimed for the middle. They just aimed for the human.
Is that how they do it?
Yes. And,
they were really intimidating because they had the really cool voice, voice that always said "By your command." Yes.
Yeah. Which they were voiceless in the remake. In the remake, you know, the tin cans were at least. Yeah.
Right.
All right, I will go next. No secret, we've been getting a lot of snow up around these parts. So scenes of snow and or cold that actually made you feel cold.
Well, the obvious for this one has to be John Carpenter's The Thing.
Ah, good. Mm-hmm. Cold and claustrophobic, right?
Yeah. Anytime they would go outside and it would just feel that chill in the air and the wind and the snow and everything. Yeah. And even I think when they're inside, they were still all bundled up and stuff. So it was not a warm movie.
No, it was not a warm movie. Yeah. You could just feel the snot fruit from your face.
I'm going to go with the movie Frozen about the kids who get trapped on the ski lift.
That's, there you go. Very good.
That is a it's a rough movie. Good one, but man.
I don't know that I would say that it actually made me feel cold, but I'm going to go with the zombie Nazi movie Dead Snow about a ski vacation turned into a Nazi zombie bloodbath.
That's right. I remember seeing the cover thinking, hey, that's kind of cool, but then I've been...
It's actually quite good.
I've been just like assaulted with Nazi zombie movies so much recently that I can't deal with them anymore.
It is the best Nazi zombie movie out there.
It may have been the original one too, for all I know, but it's
it is not the
it is not okay.
Nazi Zombies goes back at least to Zombie Lake, the Jean Roland movie from like 1978. It goes back at least that far, where Nazi zombies come out of the lake, and man, that is bad. But Dead Snow is quite fun. Quite fun.
Nice. Wait, Dave, if you hate zombie Nazi movies, I don't know if you're going to like The Untouchables.
Okay. Spoiler.
Sorry, spoiler.
That's
sorry.
The twist ending. You just blew it.
Sorry. You thought it was a heartwarming story about the friendship between a paraplegic and a...
Apparently not.
No, it's actually about...
Apparently not. Okay, so my movie is Snowbound, the Jim and Jennifer Stolpa story. Okay. This is a made-for-TV movie from 1994, starring Neil Patrick Harris as Jim Stolpa and Kelly Williams of The Practice fame and some other movies or whatever. And Michael Grossman is in this as well. And it's a based on a true story movie where a young couple and their child get stranded in the middle of nowhere, and they have to hike hundreds of miles in the snow and drink snow, and they've got frostbite, and it's pretty. I don't know why I remember it, and it was easy to find IMDb, so I didn't remember the title, but I have very specific recollections of the actual movie and scenes from the movie for some reason, and that will always be Neil Patrick Harris's most powerful role as Jim Stolpa.
His third mention tonight?
No, that's true. This is brought to you by Neil Patrick Harris. Oh, it's amazing how that all comes together. Okay, so take us home, Eric.
All right,
Eye patch. So Neil Patrick Harris is in this part. Okay, let's see here. Okay, I'm going to go now. Mac, you have to help me out here. I don't know his name, but the Klingon in Star Trek VI with the bolted-on eye patch.
Yes, General, I want to say... I want to say it's Chang, but
yeah, no, that's that three. Right. That's three. That's Christopher Lloyd, right? Was it? I don't know. Was it? Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'll look it up.
Hold on. We got to find that out. Played by how come I'm blanking on who he's played by?
Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, Christopher Plummer. Right. So, that's all.
It's bolted on.
Bolted on. That was pretty sweet.
I have the making of book has a close up of the eye patch. And the little screws that bolt it on have tiny little Klingon symbols etched onto them, which you can't see on screen.
Detail.
Well, attention to detail.
Was Peter Jackson in charge of making that?
That's right. Did they say something? You know, it's like, you're a nerd. You know, is that what it's like?
I don't know.
Drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, it's totally drink your Ovaltine.
All right.
Yes, it is General Chang. So, surprised that hasn't been referenced on the community
good
yet.
Oh, yeah, good call. You're General Chang. Who is, we don't need to start talking who as far as Klingons in the start. Good call, General Chang. You are correct.
I guess the first one that comes to mind is Nick Fury from the Avengers.
Nice.
That's right.
Played the movie by Samuel Jackson, of course. You know, in the comics, it was a gradual injury. He received the injury to his eye years earlier, but only had to put on the eye patch years later because his eye was gradually getting worse.
Make it sound like a tragic pink eye incident.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
It just never would heal.
Skrull virus that just...
All right, so mine is actually going to kill two options, only one of which I think Dave would be using.
You're clear because I already dropped the Chang bomb on you.
Oh, it was you. Who's left? Is it just me?
Just you before
me.
Eric.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Well, that's fine. Then I don't care.
No, that's mine.
But I might be. The actual selection is the main character from an obscure Swedish movie called Thriller, A Cruel Picture.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
Which is hard to watch.
Is not the making of the Michael Jackson video.
different cruel picture.
Okay.
The gimmick of which is after all of the horrible things that have happened to this woman, Christina Eklund, I think is her name. Christina Lindbergh. She winds up training in various forms of martial arts and firearms, and matches her eye patch which her eye has been plucked out by scumbags, to her current outfit. A move that was ripped off by Kill Bill with the Daryl Hannah character directly.
Ah, yes, yes. So was that, which one, was the Kill Bill one you thought I would jump all over?
Well, that would be the one that, you know, that would be the easy, that would be the low-hanging fruit.
Well, I will see if Eric takes it. There's one low-hanging fruit that I didn't opt for, but I'm interested what yours is, Eric.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go with that one, Dave, I think. The one you're talking about was the backup in case someone took mine. I don't know why they would, but I recently
just
watched...
Just to be clear, it's One-Eyed Willie? Yes?
That was the low-hanging fruit. No reason to be mysterious about it.
That's right. Let's not dance around this topic.
So now the elephant in the room is always Goonies. Now my answer, I recently watched The Faculty so I could listen to the FS Movie podcast about it. But the part of the movie is John Stewart is a science teacher, and he gets stabbed in the eye while he's an alien. And at the end of the movie, once he's not an alien anymore, even though it seemed like he died during the movie, he's wearing an eye patch. So.
Is that the old movie with Jessica Alba?
Jessica
Alba's not in it, but
this was directed by
Robert Rodriguez.
Is Jessica Alba not in it? Okay, been a long time since I saw the movie.
Elijah's in it.
Yeah, Janet Brewster. Yeah, Elijah Wood.
Okay. That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
They have a popular song attached to it.
There was a version of another Brick in the Wall Part 2.
Very good. Lots of good. There's actually a lot of good eye patches out there. A couple other ones occurred to me. Kramer tries an eye patch on just for as an affectation. He wears that a couple times. That was kind of interesting.
I also had number 2 from Austin Powers on my list, just in case.
That's good. Right? Yes,
on the list. Is there anyone in Willow with an eye patch, Dave?
I was thinking about that, but I don't think so. And I don't think Neil Patrick Harris ever played anyone with an eye patch, did he?
He might have. I bet Barney on How I Met Your Mother wore an eye patch for one of his one of his plays. So.
Arrested Development, any eye patches in Arrested Development?
I'm trying to think if there was an eye patch. There's part of me that believes that Job wound up wearing an eye patch at one point, but I don't think it's true.
It seems like there should be one in Arrested Development.
I would say in the pilot when Tobias was on
of course.
The raft. I bet you would find a gentleman wearing an eye patch on that raft.
There
might. I'm finding unconfirmed reports that that Barry might have worn an eye patch in an episode.
Well,
in the episode Queen for a Day.
For sure.
Was it during his lawsuit against the LA Kings?
It might have been.
Yeah, it might have been, because then he like rubbed his eye and then, you know, touched George Michael and said, you know, oh, you might want to stay away from me. I think I'm contagious.
And again, not to dump on the Thursday night lineup in NBC anymore, but just the fact that the name of the restaurant where that waitress suing for, you know, getting obese was named Skip Church's. Say that. That alone, Skip Church's, that is. Yes, okay. So, again, all this to set ourselves up right, Daryl, for crushing disappointment.
For crushing disappointment. And I'm trying so hard to temper my expectations for this, but I want it so bad.
Yeah, me too.
I really want it so bad.
All right, we'll see. All right, well, with that joyous note, let's end this edition of the Friday Filibuster. Thanks for listening. FridayFilibuster at DVDVerdict.com is the email address. Mac, take us out.
Wacko. We'll